Jesus, please don't be mad. I know that it makes you sad when I simply don't obey.
Welcome to Face of Appalachia, hidden stories of faith and value. My name is Rob. I'm a priest and chaplain. In my time, what I have noticed is so often people see Central Appalachia as a monoculture. Everyone is exactly the same. They have the same beliefs. And in my experience, that has not been the case at all. So join me as we listen to people's stories, find out more. And I hope that you discover, just like I have, this is not a monocultural, monofaith kind of experience in place. I want to especially thank Kentucky Humanities. National Endowment for Humanities is our grant sponsor. And today, adjunct professor and so many other things, Daryl Reif's with us. So tell us a little about you.
So yeah, I'm Daryl Reif. I am adjunct here at UPike, teach film studies, and full-time I'm in foster care. And I'm a licensing specialist and evaluate homes and make sure they're fit to foster the kids of Kentucky. There's a huge need for that. And I grew up in eastern Ohio, actually. It was where I was born, in Wheeling, West Virginia, but my parents' roots were in Appalachia, very much Martin County and Mingo counties.
Gotcha.
And then we moved here when I was 9 to Louisa.
Ah.
And then I went to Pikeville College. So I'm definitely Appalachian blood through and through.
Gotcha. So, I mean, that's a big difference. I mean, foster care and film studies, right?
Yeah.
And how long have you been doing the foster care stuff?
I've been in mental health. I worked at a community mental health prior to foster care and was with intellectual and developmental disabilities. So I've got a bachelor in psychology.
Okay.
So that's where that, and so I was there for 10 years, and now next month will be 8 years I've been
wow.
with foster care.
So I mean, I'm thinking, because you've dealt with some really vulnerable populations.
Absolutely.
You've really seen the area in a whole different light.
100%, yes.
And this is totally not connected, but I'm just curious,
okay, yeah.
Like dealing with such vulnerable people in the region, what have you kind of learned or discovered maybe about eastern Kentucky in that time?
There's a huge need for a lot of supports here.
Hmm.
And we don't necessarily always have them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, everybody, you know, you were saying everybody, you know, is not the same. And that's very true, because we see so many different families and so many different needs. And the company I work for, they're very much about, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. You know, we take you in as foster parents.
Yeah.
You know, we take, you know, single parents. We
okay.
take LGBT. We take divorced parents. We take, you know, there's no religious basis for our foster parents. We say, if you provide them with a good home and you're a loving parent, that's all we can ask for.
That's awesome.
And that's one of our main things is supporting and engaging all communities, no matter
okay.
what. So we've opened homes that were, not Amish, but
like a Mennonite or something like
Mennonite.
That. Yeah.
So we've had Mennonite homes, we've had LGBT homes.
Yeah.
So it's just, you're providing a good, safe environment for kids. That's all we want.
That's incredible.
We're not worried about, you know, anything you may believe. So.
Yeah, and I would think rewarding, but probably also hard work.
It can be. You have to compartmentalize,
huh.
And that's with just, you know, any sort of, you know, because the stories and I've heard, seeing kids that, you know, would probably crush most people.
Sure,
just hearing that. And
yeah.
And you just have to sort of put it in there and say, well, if I can't do it, you know, somebody's got to do it. So I just sort of put it in that box and leave it there.
Wow. And you said there's a big need for foster parents.
Absolutely.
So that sounds like a kind of a growing, is it a growing need?
So there's probably about 10,000 kids in the state of Kentucky that probably need a home.
10,000?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anywhere from 8 to 10,000.
Wow.
And it's probably one in about 300,000 homes or foster homes in the state. So we're talking like 1% of the population's foster parents.
Sure. Wow.
Which is, you know,
I'm just really moved by the fact, so 8 to 10,000 kids, that's more than there are people in Pikeville.
Yeah.
Right, that's, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And in Kentucky, of course, is a smaller state,
yep.
population-wise. Well, okay, I appreciate you sharing that. Shameless plug for foster parenting, if people
it
want
did.
To.
Yeah, I didn't mean to do that.
No, but that's really helpful.
But it, yeah.
So as we think about faith and exploring all that, you're a man who takes on no labels when it comes
Correct.
To that. That's important to you. But I'm suspecting that maybe growing up that wasn't the case, or maybe
not
it was.
At all.
Okay,
no,
not at all. So tell us a little bit when you were growing up, kind of the religious, spiritual climate, that kind of stuff.
Raised up very non-denominational Christian. Grew up in a Church of God up until we moved back here
okay.
to Louisa. And then it was non-denominational for sure. Small churches and very fire and brimstone, very evangelical. Probably typical of a lot of people in the area.
Yeah.
Grew up in. I've got two older brothers, older sister, and a younger sister. Big family. And just raised going to church at least probably 3 or 4 times a week.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you guys were in it to win it. I mean, you were going all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
A lot of things were banned in the home. television.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No cable, anything that had any sort of swearing or anything, definitely sometimes PG wasn't even
yeah.
good enough. So raised very much everything's bad.
Wow, okay, so that's pretty unique then. You're going to church and these kind of, I don't want to say fringy, but smaller to themselves kind
mm-hmm.
of churches, and then you're not having TV in your house.
Yeah, we would go through phases.
Okay.
Sometimes we would, and then if, there was a show on that and it said a cuss word or something, my mom would be like, all right, we got to get rid of it. And it was, and music, all music had to pertain to God. It had all there was no music in the home except anything that pertained to Jesus, Christianity.
Okay, so no, you're not going to listen to Kiss or AC/DC in the house?
Nothing, unless it was specifically about Jesus.
So. Oh. So, and growing up then, was that like, when you grew up in a home like that, it seems like you're either really in it or you're really out of it. So when you were growing up, were you really in it? Were you questioning? What was going on?
I look back and it's something that I've tried to figure out for myself because I believed, but I never did the altar call and
oh,
never
yeah.
repented.
Okay.
Never did that. And we didn't believe in you need to be like baptism was, you had to get baptized, but it wasn't like, the main thing was that you're going to the altar
yeah.
in front of pretty much everybody, altar
yeah.
call.
Okay.
Go up there and this is your profession of, I'm now repenting. Never did that. Always felt like I needed to.
Okay.
But I was like, I can't bring myself. I'm an introvert, for one, and I think it was, I don't want to be in front of these people.
Yeah, okay.
And I never could do that. And wrestled with that. I went to church up until I didn't like where my parents were going, so yeah. I'm going to try somewhere else.
Oh, sure, okay.
And so I went to a Free Will Baptist for a long time in Louisa, and I never connected with the people there, really. It was I had a hard time with connection, I think.
Okay.
And then by the time I got to college, I went to St. Francis, and I was like, maybe Catholicism.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And, I went. The priest did mention Batman in his sermon. I was like, "Oh, maybe this is,
this could be good.
Maybe this is for me." And then, but I just like no, just there's no, just didn't happen. And then identified as agnostic,
okay,
for a long time, and then that evolved to atheism. And then it was like, I don't like any of this stuff because I the more I read about all religions,
mm-hmm.
the more I appreciate parts of them.
Sure,
and particularly Eastern thought. That's the one that I'm probably most aligned with as far as a more of a philosophy than a religion.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, so when you were starting to make your own kind of choices and starting to explore and experiment, and when you're finally like, okay, I'm just not going to do the church thing anymore, was there any kind of family pressure, social pressure to say like you really need to go up there and
I
repent?
Never told my parents.
Oh, okay, so
I
that was just not
them. And they
not
died. So yeah.
Okay. So there was nothing like some kind of like sit down like
never
we have to talk
them.
About.
Mm-mm.
Oh, gotcha.
No, because I think it wouldn't have. I never felt it was needed for my mom.
Oh, yeah.
I think she'd just been crushed by it.
Okay.
Because she was always requesting prayer for me in church and hoping I would get saved and always worried, and I've had people come up to me that I don't even know and they say, hey, I knew your mom and she requested you must be Daryl and.
So you're known by the as the son who his mom was requesting prayer for.
Yeah. And so I just never, I was like, she doesn't need to know.
Okay.
It's irrelevant to our relationship
yeah.
overall. I mean, it was probably relevant to her that I got saved. But, other than that, it was, yeah.
And did that ever, knowing that there's a parent out there that's like, kind of asking people to pray for you and like plead for your soul. I mean, that seems a little unique. Does that like play into like your experience with religion now? having that kind of pressure? I don't pressure, but
no,
just like...
Yeah, I get it. Some family members, they like to mention it. And,
okay.
You know, that, you know, would you go to church with me? And I said, well, will you do this with me? And they're like, no. I was like, you know, it's a give and take. And because, you know, I'm not trying to convert anybody. I'm just like, hey.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, and I was thinking when you asked me to do this, I was thinking about the term spirituality and how to define that. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if I can. For anyone.
Yes.
You know, like, it seems like a very difficult word to define. And because I'm like, what is spirituality? And I don't know, really, once I started thinking about it.
You know, it was so funny. A couple of years ago, I was in a classroom. Dr. Browning was looking at spiritual, but not really, just the growing movement in the country.
Yeah.
And so I sat with the students in there, and I forget why I was in there talking with them, but I asked them, I said, you know, what labels make most sense to you, right? And overwhelmingly, all the students were like, I'm really uncomfortable with labels. And it was, what I was feeling was really highly personal. Was like, this is kind of a really important thing to me, but like, it's personal.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing was like, as soon as you start labeling it, then it makes it feel like I need to say, okay, well, it's not like that, but it's, you know, and it's like too much explanation.
Absolutely.
So it's just like, I just don't want to. So when you're saying it's hard to define, I get that. Like, I hear that from my students all the time of like, it's more than what you think, right?
It is, yeah.
So when did you finally get to the place where you could kind of be comfortable sitting with that?
I would say, and you know, I look back and I think I've always thought this way, mm-hmm. even from a small child. I remember being in Sunday school when I was like 4 years old, one of my earliest memories, and I've got a need to know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I just do. That's just, I'm inquisitive and I need to know. And if I don't know, I can't accept things.
Okay.
I got to understand. And I was 4 years old and asked the Sunday school teacher, she was talking about, you know, Genesis and, you know, God created the heavens and the earth and going through all that. And I said, where'd God come from?
Yeah, okay.
Innocent kid question.
Yeah, it's a great
question. But she says, we don't ask that question. And didn't address it.
Sure.
And I was like, huh, well, that's, you know, I need to know, though. So I think it's just been always there. And that's why, you know, I never really did the whole repent thing and never really actually went through. I never was technically a Christian.
Sure, right, yeah.
By not doing the process of repenting and asking for forgiveness and all that, so... I think it was once I got to that point of like, oh, you know, this is, and learning more, and I just, you know, it just occurred to me yesterday, I think, Carol Grizzard was a year ago, I think yesterday,
yes,
that she died.
Yep.
And, you know, Carol was a big influence on my life, and all my professors at Pikeville College at the time, from psychology, history, religion, they all, you know, and as Dr. Howie, who's who knows what, but he'll self-identify as Taoist, but he's not a Taoist. But, you know, and then I had some psych professors, and you know, of course, Carol was Presbyterian minister, and it was just, you know, one thing I'd say, I'll be damned, or something like that, and Carol would be like, no, you won't. So it was always that, you know, I was like, okay, I'm trying not to judge a whole people for one, because I was sort of angry at times about Christianity, just seeing what it, you know, if you look at history and then even locally and just some of the damage it can do. And it was people like Carol that really helped me say, okay, I can't be that judgmental either. Like, I've got to be open as well.
Well, I think it's interesting, right, when people move from one tradition to the next, whatever the tradition, like here in the mountains, of course, Christianity is kind of the ocean that people swim in,
mm-hmm.
and then when they're starting to leave that, oftentimes it starts with kind of like a, kind of an anger,
mm-hmm.
And then it kind of subsides, you know. We were in one of our talks, we were talking with a person who grew up, for the first 48 or 49 years of her life, she was in the LDS church, Mormon. Mm-hmm. I mean, Utah, you name it, all that. And then when she started leaving, she talks about like the anger, right? She said, I was angry for 3 years.
Yeah.
And then she just finally got to the place where I need to kind of get rid of that.
And you can almost become militant.
And
you get the extremes. You know, you can be extremely Christian and extremely atheist.
Yeah.
And so then it just looks the same. And that's when I started to notice. I was like, oh, this is not for me. This is not who I am. Like, you know, I was raised, you know, I have no issues the way I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was, you know, my parents were very loving.
Okay.
You know, very accepting of people that around here you probably wouldn't think, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Very, like, you know, my mom said, you know, I don't love the sin, but I love them.
Yeah, that's cool.
And just, you know, I mean, she was very turn the other cheek.
Wow,
People, you know, if somebody needs something, she was there for them. It didn't matter what. Even I would say, Mom, you can't help these people. They're not. Like, they're taking advantage.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like, doesn't matter.
Wow.
Okay. And I'm like, well, that's a Christian to me.
Yeah. She's really kind-hearted, loving, yep.
And I was like, that's the true message of Christianity is be that loving person no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, like, you know, I try to do that. You know, I try to be that type of person, too. So that's why I like no labels. Let me just, you know, pick what I need and like from everything and not be associated with that. Because, like you said, that your students that were uncomfortable with that. I get it.
Well, it makes sense, right? Because you're highly inquisitive, smart, so you can kind of, as you explore and find out things that, like, make sense for you and all of that. So when going through college, you know, you're kind of meeting these professors and, you know, raising questions and growing and all of that, and then here you are doing this frontline, either mental health or dealing with vulnerable people, so you're seeing kind of the good and really bad of society,
absolutely.
Right? Could really jade you too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And as you're growing up, and so when you have these no labels now, you know, people oftentimes will use religious communities or faith communities as like their social connection, right? It's like, I'm a part of the Bible study group, or I'm whatever. So now, where do you find your sense of like community if it's not rooted in some kind of like faith organization?
Bars.
Bar, yeah.
No,
okay.
I'm joking.
Carissa's.
No. Oh, God, no, not there. No, not there. No, you know, it's funny though, you do meet people though, and you sort of, I think people are sort of drawn and they can figure out where you are. And then there, because there's a lot of people that are, don't have labels or not Christian around here. They really are. And you sort of find those people, oddly. And so there is a community of people here, you know, that some I don't even know. But, you know, I've got a lot of people I know that are. And it's just, you sort of just, I don't know, glom onto one another somehow. And that's sort of the community aspect of it. And just having that good friend base and being able to, you know, sort of just expand beyond that. But yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily easy to be like, oh, I'm going to go find a non-religious organization in in East Kentucky.
Yeah.
It'd be great. Uh-huh. It would be great, you know, like an interfaith or, you know, I don't even like that word.
It's right.
Just, you know, the words just, I listened to a podcast called Data Over Dogma. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
Uh-uh.
It's a Bible scholar and an atheist. And the Bible scholar is like, you know, I just want to bring biblical scholarship to the masses. That's
goal.
Okay. You know, and he's in Utah. He's in Salt Lake City and worked for the Mormon Church and did like missionary work as a Mormon. He doesn't talk about who he is now.
Oh, sure. Okay.
But he talks about definitions. He doesn't like definitions because he says, sort of like, well, his example is, tell me what furniture is.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah,
I can't. You know? And so he very much reminds me of Carol Grizzard. Is why I love him too. He's funny. He's very smart, and he is very much trying to bring that to the masses of just understanding the Bible.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, and I listen to that. Read a lot of Taoism.
Okay.
I do read. You know, I've read the Tao Te Ching. Just recently read Chuang Tzu, which is translated by Thomas Merton.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he translated this Taoist monk called Chuang Tzu, and it's really funny and really just, and, you know, and I like a spirituality, a philosophy, a religion that's funny. I mean, read a lot of Buddhism. Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese monk, love him. Read a lot of his stuff.
Okay.
Because he doesn't, you know, he's not preachy. He's just like, this is just, you know, this is who we are. This is where we need to be.
Mm.
And was introduced to him after my mom died. Somebody gave me a copy of his book about death.
Okay.
And it was just, you know, he wasn't talking about the afterlife. He wasn't talking about, he was just like, you know, you've always got him with you. You've always got him with you.
Mm.
You know, when you step on the grass barefoot, that's, you know, reminds you of that's who they are. And just, he goes through this whole thing of just, it made sense to me at the time when I was deeply grieving.
Yeah, of course, right? I mean, you're headlong into grief, right? Yeah.
And he was great. So yeah, there's a lot of religious people I've read and appreciate their work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's one of the myths, right? Is when people are agnostic or atheist or no labels or whatever, for kind of hard religious people, there's just like no understanding of how to understand a person who doesn't have that same kind of framework. It's like, but how would you not just rape and pillage the villages? Like, how are you like a moral person, or how are you, you have any kind of purpose or meaning, you know? And you're like, but by the way, it doesn't work that way, right?
It happened to me last year. actually. I was on a date.
Okay.
And she asked me, she said, "You're not a Christian, are you?" And I said, "No, I'm not." And she said, "Where do you get your moral compass?" And I said, "Where do preachers that rape kids get theirs?"
Sorry, it's just a yes. Yeah.
So, you know, and she's like, like she couldn't say anything.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I'm fine. Like, I, you know. but it's the same idea. Like, where do you get your, I'm like, I get it. Like, but some people don't, and they're very deeply religious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or, well, on the surface.
Yeah, exactly. They're doing the game, right? So for you now, when it comes to, you know, we've talked about community, but things like hope and meaning in death, these big things that people oftentimes will use one particular framework for, how do you kind of, what are your views on those? And also, like, how did you come up with those? Is it just kind of like your own exploration or?
Yeah, definitely my own exploration. And death's a funny one. Because, you know, sometimes I feel like Christianity has evolved into death's, you know, that's the reason you're a Christian.
Yeah, it's like, hey,
that's the point.
Nothing about life, all about death.
It is, you know, because it's like, you know, when I die, I want to go to a better place.
Uh-huh.
And that's the whole, it's not really about what's on this planet. And for me, it is about what's on this planet because, again, being inquisitive, needing to know.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't understand, I you're going to have to make me understand. But this is what I know, and this is all I can know, and so I'm going to do the best I can.
Yeah.
And the only legacy I want to leave is I want to have a gaudy urn with my ashes that one of my family members is going to have to keep. and I want to torture them for the rest of their lives. And it has to be passed down as some generational thing of the ugliest urn ever.
Some really nasty, bedazzled kind of thing.
The worst. I want it to be the worst, and then they'll feel bad if they get rid of it. That's all I care. That's all I want. I want to give grief to my family.
I had one of my students one time, he came to me, very serious, I mean, he set me up well. He came and he said, "I've decided I have a path for my life and my death." And I'm like, "Okay." And he said, "You know those like sea turtles that live for like 200 years? And I was like, "Yeah, I've heard of those things." He's like, "I'm going to buy a couple." And he said, "Then I'm going to will them. And my family's going to take care of those turtles for years and years and years."
I appreciate that.
He said, "That's my gift." I'm like, "You do you, man."
I appreciate it. I love that. That's even better than my urn.
So maybe turtles and urns, I guess.
But
so
a for gaudy you, turtle urn. There we go.
So for you, really, it's about, like you were saying, it's about the stuff you can see right now and just kind of like doing that and being a good person and whatever's next, right? Who knows, right? We don't have any.
I can't say for sure I know.
Yeah. So for you, you're just trying to live your best life. And then, so in the mornings when you're waking up and you're working throughout your day, kind of what then gives you meaning?
That's a good question. I don't know if I can actually answer that off the cuff like that.
Yeah, no, it's like, that's part of your core part of who you are, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I just friends and family, you know, that is a big part of my life. I take relationships like that, you know, very serious. Mm-hmm. You know, I maintain, you know, friendships and try to be there for people when they need me. Mm-hmm. And because I've got people that are there for me. You know, I'm not perfect. I've made mistakes, plenty of mistakes throughout my life.
Yeah.
And I try to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of my things that keeps me going is I feel like I can always learn.
Okay.
You know, like listening to that podcast, for instance, that I was telling you about.
Yeah.
It was, he was going over how a lot of people think that Christmas comes from pagan origins.
Yeah.
And I always did. I was accepting that it did. And he's like, "It doesn't." And he explained where it actually came from, where it started in the 1800s, and just went through the whole process of how this, lie was perpetuated.
Okay.
And I was like, "Oh, like, I've learned something, you know, and it's changed my mind." And that's, I'm willing to change my mind on things. And I try to be humble and have that humility because so many people don't.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just a radical arrogance of like, I have everything, all the secrets of the universe I now know, and I'm going to tell you, and you really should buckle up because I've got the truth for you. I'm always like, I don't think it works that way, right?
No.
Like, that's kind of weird. Like, you know,
like,
people for thousands of years have been trying to figure it out, and somehow you figured it out with two YouTube videos. Like, I just,
yes.
Just like,
they did the research.
Yes, and like, I don't know about that.
Well, and I remember reading early on, too, a quote from the Buddha about, he was talking to somebody, he was talking to teaching. He was like, don't listen to me. Don't take my word for it, you know? And I'm like, whoa. You know,
that's... You're the Buddha.
Yeah. Like, I mean, to me, that was monumental.
Yeah.
That a religious teacher from, you know, centuries ago was like, yeah, don't take my word for this. Find out for yourself. I'm like, whoa, that's just against everything. I knew.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because it's like typically the truth is something outside of you, and now you're being told or being invited to say, like, just explore for yourself. Personal journey, kind of figure out what works for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And therein lies the enlightenment, right? So as you're kind of exploring your life now, and as you're, obviously I know relationships are really important to you, because like I think about the Howie parties and that group who stays together, takes care of each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot better than most churches I've seen, right?
Sadly.
I mean, really, sadly. I mean, you've been friends with one of your professors since you had him, and that's been a long
25
time.
25 years.
Which is unbelievable.
25 long years. I tell him every week.
Which is unbelievable, because, I mean, most people hardly remember their college professors or know where they're at, and you guys still know each other, you still hang out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, are close friends, which I think is really, really admirable, especially in a highly disconnected, independent world that we're living in right now, which is so cool. But you are, this is just something that hit me, you know, you're a film guy.
I am.
You love...
That might be my religion.
Film.
Horror films in particular.
Okay, horror films.
Yeah.
So, what's your, like, your go-to, what's your, like, I guess a favorite film might be when you're into something, you're like, I can't really say my favorite, but, like...
I can.
Okay.
I can.
Tell me about
favorite
it.
Horror films is the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974.
Okay, that's really neat. That's almost like a guy who's like, I appreciate the King James Version, 1611. So the Chainsaw Massacre, 1974.
The original.
Yeah. Why?
That's a good question. And I've dealt with trying to understand why I like horror so much. And I don't quite understand. You know, they've done studies on people people that love horror tend to have a lot of anxiety.
Oh, okay.
Oddly.
That's
because
really...
it's a controlled... It's controlled, though. So the anxiety, they've noticed that it, because the horror is controlled there,
okay,
and it's not real life, it's sort of like a roller coaster. I don't know.
That's fascinating.
It's odd, yes.
I would have never guessed that.
Yeah. And so I remember watching horrors, so... I was allowed to watch horror movies as a kid, but they had to be like pre-1960.
Okay, okay,
so
yeah.
We're talking the Universal, we're talking, you know, Dracula, Wolfman, Frankenstein, and all those. I was allowed to watch those because there was nothing else.
Yeah.
That was, you know, too controversial. So I remember, I would say the first horror film I remember watching, and I don't know if it's a horror film necessarily, King Kong.
Okay.
From the 30s, the original. And I remember when King Kong falls off of the Empire State Building and dies. I was just crushed because I saw him bleeding in black and white, and I looked up at my dad and I said, Dad, that's just ketchup, right? That's just ketchup, because I did not want King Kong to die.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You know, I guess I may have, like, related to King Kong in some way.
Okay.
Particularly now, since at the end of the movie he's eating the rich. And it's, you know, he's... It was started from King Kong and on, and then I was sneaking and watching horror movies when I shouldn't, and they were scaring me to death. And I remember the first time I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and there's one scene that still, I can remember when I first saw it, and it still jars me. And it's been a lifelong love since. And
that is amazing.
Yeah.
So now there's, so you got Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and is there anything, any of those movies that you love, and you're like, man, if I could, like, play a role in one of those movies, here's the role I would love to play, or the character, or...
I've tried to write, and I've come up with ideas for horror films, and I think I'm too close to the subject material. I would never be happy.
Oh, okay.
I'm just too close to it, and I love it too much, and I would ruin it. I would think I ruined it. Nope.
Well, I saw the one film you produced. You showed at the... It must have been the Horror Festival last year. There was one you showed that had a lot of religious overtones in it.
That I made?
I thought it was you. Because maybe it wasn't last year. Maybe it was 2 years ago. Because you were there and Howie was there. And there was a short film. It was like black and white.
Oh, I did. Oh, yes, that thing. I'm sorry. Yeah, that thing. I don't know what that was. It was very much a avant-garde.
Yes, it had that kind of vibe.
Yeah, it was. In Huntington, West Virginia, they do the 3-day film challenge.
Oh.
Where they give you 2 words and you make a film out of it over a weekend, and give it to them they give it to you on Friday morning, you submit it to them by Sunday evening.
Whoa.
Shoot, direct, edit, everything in 3 days. So I was like, why not? I'll try it. And so, yes, that's what that was. That was very much just experimental avant-garde.
Okay, yeah.
No genre, really.
Well, I knew it had one of those things of appreciating the development of it, but then I was like, this is something a film person does, because there's some things I don't totally understand. It's like it's like when someone showed me Eraserhead, I'm like, I don't have any
influences. I love David Lynch. David Lynch. That was one of my influences for that little short film, for sure. It was David Lynch.
Okay, it had that kind of, and I'm I never forget one of my students showed me Eraserhead, and I'm like, they showed me the trailer. I was like, I don't know what I've just experienced. I don't know. And they were explaining, and they're so excited, and I'm like, I'm going to need a little bit more. I need a little bit more knowledge.
David Lynch said that's his most religious film.
Really?
He does.
Eraserhead?
And somebody asked him in an interview, said, can you explain it? He said, no.
So maybe that goes back to what you said earlier, right? It's like spirituality is something that really can't be explained.
And David Lynch, he was practiced transcendental meditation. That was his big thing.
Oh, I didn't know
he
that.
He did
okay.
that. Yeah, because he just died in January this year.
Yeah.
And he was, that was his big thing, and he was very much a proponent getting it into schools too. He was actually introducing meditation into schools. So he was, he was a very spiritual sort of guy.
Yeah.
But it was on his terms.
Who
knows? Eraserhead. I don't know. I've seen it 100 times. But no idea. But that's okay. It's not for me to understand.
There's something too, right? The idea of just experiencing something without trying to master it by understanding it. You just experience it, right?
Yeah, and that's sort of film too, and art in general.
Yeah,
I think as artists, just you know, however you experience it, and some people do have religious experiences when it comes to film.
Yeah,
music in particular, 100%. Festivals and all that. And so there is something. It goes probably back to Joseph Campbell and the whole mythology. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Joseph Campbell and his works and just how we're all sort of connected by these very basic ideas and needs, and we just all want to be happy.
Well, recently I had a student, we were researching awe, right? Particularly how you experience awe looking at the stars and how does that affect your body? But there's a research expert on awe. It has 8 categories, and one of them is if you're at a concert, right, and you're all collectively singing Taylor Swift or whoever it is, right, and you can have kind of an awe experience.
Yeah.
If I'm with 18,000 people and we're all right from Bonnaroo or something, there's an awe to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
I've experienced that at concerts.
That's cool.
I feel you're just you're there and you're connected with an artist, and it's almost like a ritual or ceremony.
Call and response, and the guitarist stops and everyone yells the words out, right? I mean, it's very much religious in that type of thing. So so clearly you are, you've got art all over you, right? You are an artist in some ways.
I wouldn't define myself as that.
Film guy, art.
I like art, but I wouldn't say I'm an artist. Yeah.
Finding all these ways. So I guess the last question, as we talked about this kind of indefinable spirituality, but then you're in the trenches every day helping people who are very vulnerable, and you have things that are really important to you. And how would you say that this kind of path that you're on right now helps you cope and address kind of the hard stuff that you see in our world?
I think for me, it's one of the biggest help. One of the biggest helps for me is I've got good people around me. I've got amazing people of different walks of life, different faiths, and just having the support of others is so non-judgmental, supportive people. I've got best friends that are Christian. I've got best friends that are atheists. I've got best friends that are whatever. just really the range of people that I count on. And coworkers as well. I have some great coworkers, and we all stick together. And because it is hard what we do, and it's it's an everyday, you never know what's going to happen and what you're going to see or hear. I heard something yesterday that I'd never heard before, and I thought I'd heard everything.
And so you've been doing this a long time,
yep.
And you're like, surprised me yesterday.
And they did, yeah. A case surprised me.
Wow.
Never heard that before.
Gotcha. Well, I guess this is a bonus question then. Totally just unrelated after we just had this really hard moment. Maybe I'm trying to flee the hard moment.
You're good.
You're a music guy too. You like music,
I
right?
Do.
You
I
love
do.
Music. So for our listeners, is there a song that you would recommend? You're like, man, if you love music, you should try this song.
Now, I'm very, like, my music tastes are all over the place. And I don't feel like I recommend music to people because
okay.
Like, nobody's going to like what I like.
Just like spirituality, I can't recommend anything to you because it's too personal, man.
Yeah, almost. One of my favorite bands is Ghost, and they just came out with a new album.
Oh, so. Yeah. They did come out with a new album?
Just like 3 weeks ago.
Maybe. I didn't know that.
So, yeah, I would recommend Ghost's new album if you like that sort of thing.
And is Ghost the one that has, like, the high priest and stuff?
Yes, they've got the sort of anti-pope.
Yeah, anti-pope, that's what it is. Okay, so I guess in honor of Pope Leo XIV, go Ghost.
And, and Ghost, you know, every album they have a new lead singer. It's the same guy, but it's a different character. And so
they
just have a new pope as well.
Oh,
so.
Well, hey! I know one of my students came, and they were going to try to go see Ghost in concert. And they were explaining their real excitement, but
mm-hmm.
I had never heard of them. So I'm like, okay, you've got to send me some kind of link or something so I know what you're talking about. And I was like, oh, and then they, you know, of course they always like, by the way, they've got all, you know, don't be disturbed,
yeah.
You know. But I didn't realize how popular Ghost is.
I've seen them 6 times.
Have you really?
And going 7th time in July, so yeah.
Where are you seeing them at in July?
Louisville. Yeah.
Oh, Louisville, okay.
Yeah, they're
Fantastic.
The Yum Center, yeah. So it's fun. And they're cheesy, honestly. But that's the thing. Most people think about the way they look, and I'm like, yeah, they don't sound like you. They're not like death metal or something
coming
out of the Scandinavian black metal scene or something. Even though they are Swedish, but
and so I thought they were from some other country, but so they're Swedish.
Yeah, lead singer's from Sweden. Yeah.
Great.
And a real mastermind behind it. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hey.
So I will recommend Ghost.
Ghost. There you go. There you go. Especially with the new Pope. You know, it's
yeah,
like.
Yeah. Papa Perpetua is his name.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, hey, I appreciate your time.
Yeah,
thanks
absolutely.
For being on the show or in the podcast and sharing with us a little bit.
Yeah, no problem.
I know that it makes you sad when I simply don't obey.